This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our December 28th, 2017 edition of Invest Talk. And as always, we are here to help you become an above average investor. And the typical average investor is prone to many different types of mistakes, either due to the lack of knowledge or influence of emotions. And that's usually what it is, influence of emotions that cloud their judgment. And that could be fear, usually, or greed, one or the other. And those two things tend to take the average investor's eye off of what truly matters over the long run, which is the fundamentals of a business, right? So that's really what you should be considering, okay? So we're here to help you avoid those kind of costly mistakes. And what do we have for you today is the big question. And that is five great uses for your retirement, or your RMDs, your required minimum distributions. And this is the time of year, right? End of year. You're having to take that. Hopefully you've already taken it if you're over 70 and a half. If you're not 70 and a half, this will still help you because odds are this will still be in place when you hit 70 and a half. And you need to have a plan for that money when you take it out. So you have to you can use this mandatory financial move to your advantage if you know what you're doing. So that's our main talking point today. But of course, you drive the topics. Your calls are what's most important. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number. So let's go to Vitaly in Atlanta. He's asking about his 401k. How you doing, Vitaly?
Hey, doing good, Justin. How are you?
I'm doing great. What can I do for you?
Yeah, I had a question. So I'm currently invested in a 2055 fund through Vanguard for my 401k.
Okay. Okay.
And I was wanting to diversify, and I'm looking at two different funds that are available that include domestic stocks. One of them is VIVIX, and I'm trying to compare that one with a brand new one that they just released. But there's no fund name other than it just says Vanguard Institutional Total Stock Market Index Trust. So I'm not sure if I'm able to provide you with...
Well, that's most likely that's just following the index of the total. VTI would be a good proxy for that, the Vanguard Total Stock Market Index ETF. So it's probably the same thing. So that's going to be much more broadly diversified. You know, it's going to be a blend of growth and value. And so you can use VTI as a proxy for that. Vanguard Value Index is a 5-star fund from Morningstar, very low expenses. It's a good fund, to be frank. Is it the best value fund out there? No, but it's certainly above average, I would say. Its top holdings are Microsoft, Berkshire Hathaway, Johnson & Johnson, JP Morgan, ExxonMobil. So this is very large blue chip companies. Yields about 2.4%. So nice solid dividend, but you're probably not going to get a lot of growth out of it.
Sorry to interrupt. Are you referring to VIVIX currently?
Yes.
Okay. Gotcha.
Exactly. Yeah. So VIVIX it's a good fund. You know, my main thing question would be, what type of investor are you? Are you moderate, aggressive, conservative? Where would you say you are?
So I'm 26. I'm very aggressive, and I currently have the 2055 fund, and I want to diversify my 401k. And I wasn't sure, does it actually make sense to keep the 2055 fund and invest in other funds within the 401k options they provide as well, or should I just only do the 2055?
We're not big fans of the 2055 fund or targeted funds in general, because as you get closer to 2055, you're going to get more conservative, which maybe you should be, but maybe you shouldn't be either. So it's really about your own personal risk tolerance and maximizing the potential return of your 401k. That's one reason why we have the active 401k program. That might be something you want to look at on our website. And what that does, it will rank all of the funds in your plan, and it will look at, including your targeted funds, and it will look at fees, past performance, and the current market trends. So if the current market trends are to say bullish, it will get very, very aggressive for you, and you would be in an aggressive program. Now, if you were conservative, it would have an allocation that is far more conservative than the 2055 targeted fund, just like it would probably give you a more aggressive allocation than the 2055 targeted fund. It may use one of those targeted funds in the allocation, but really what's most important is your total asset allocation, right? And so that's what it would do for you. And moving money from the 2055 fund to either VTI or VIVIX, it will get you more aggressive. So if you are very aggressive, these are good. I'm more of the value mantra. That's the type of investors we are at KPP. We are value focused, and we like we would bend towards ETFs, mutual funds that have a value bent. So that's why I would say VIVIX for me would be more attractive. And the expenses are about the same. 4 basis points for VTI, 5 basis points for VIVIX. So pretty much the same, but you're getting a value approach and a better yield. It's only 1.75 for the total stock market index, whereas VIVX you're getting 2.4.
Would you recommend maybe just like putting 10% into 2055 and then just pick like 5 other ones that are not target date specific and just diversify through those?
Well, I would recommend that, yes, and be more aggressive. But I would recommend, you know, like our active 401k program that's going to update it quarterly. So based on market conditions, based on fees, based on performance of those funds, it was going to give you an allocation every single quarter. So, you know, and that's really what this is more about, is having a consistent, aggressive allocation, but aligned for the current market conditions and your choices. So that's what I would recommend, but if you don't want to go that route, yes, I would reduce your exposure to 2055, increase your exposure to VIVIX and VTI and maybe some of the other funds based on, you know, further analysis.
Awesome. Thank you.
No problem. Thanks for the call, Vitaly. Now, people are rushing out to their county offices, more eager than ever to pay their property taxes before the year ends. Now, the IRS has a message for those homeowners. Not so fast. Now, I thought we'd spend a couple minutes on this hot financial topic today. And the New York Times published a story today after doing some digging from the IRS and other tax experts. Now, the tax bill from President Trump that he signed into law last week sharply limited the itemized deductions for state and local taxes while raising the standard deduction for individuals and couples. Those rules do not take effect until 2018, next year. However, it has led some homeowners, particularly in high tax affluent areas, to try to prepay their 2018 property taxes before the deduction disappears. Now, an advisory notice posted on the IRS website on Wednesday said the maneuver could work, but only under limited circumstances. To qualify for the deduction, property taxes not only need to be paid in 2017, they also must be assessed in this year as well. Meaning that homeowners who prepaid their taxes based on estimated assessments, or who tried to pay several years worth of taxes at once, will probably be out of luck. They won't be able to apply that. Now, property tax schedules vary widely from state to state and even county to county. Some states have already sent out tax assessments for part of 2018. So if that was the case, you can pay those and it will apply. So you need to check with the IRS website, your state and local rules, tax rules. And so in certain states, prepayments almost certainly will not help taxpayers. Now, this is InvestTalk. I'm Justin Klein. Keeping an eye out for trends, and here's one as we look ahead in 2018. Economies abroad accelerated faster than the United States markets. Those stocks were up 23% last year, while emerging markets rose 30%. So how do you respond as an investor? Let's talk about it, or any money questions at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve. Jim from Indiana. I was calling today trying to think about Amazon and all the boxes that I have sitting in my living room right now, getting ready after Christmas to take care of in the garbage, and wondering who makes those boxes. So I did a little research and found International Paper, IP, and was thinking about that, and might this be a good way to make that play on Amazon, but still stay in a good price-earnings ratio, forward PE, PEG, et cetera. So wanting your thoughts on that, look forward to hearing your answer on this podcast. Thanks so much.
All right, he's looking at International Paper. It's one of the largest paper companies in the world, about $2.4 billion market cap. Yields about 3.3%. They do have a pretty hefty debt-to-equity ratio of 255%, pretty high. And their P/E ratio is not cheap, about 19. Return on equity, though, is 35, which that's what I really like. I really like that high profitability ratio, 34%. They were struggling with revenue about a year ago, but it's starting to accelerate. I don't know if Amazon changed their source of boxes to IP, and that's what's increasing their revenue. But nonetheless, earnings were up 19% last quarter year over year, up 5% this year, and next year they're supposed to go up 23% in their earnings. So certainly that's accelerating for various reasons. International Paper is diversified, so it's not like all they do is make boxes, right? They distribute printing paper, packaging, forest products, chemical products. Offers three segments: industrial packaging, printing papers, and consumer packaging. So it's pretty well diversified, very large, so I like that. It's rallied as well, though, so a lot of this growth is built in. Its 52-week low is about 49. It was as low as the low 30s back in March of 2016, and it's rallied almost to its highs from 2015. And it's scheduled to make the most it's ever has made next year at $4.31. Now, analysts are historically more bullish than they should be, so I wouldn't expect that much growth, especially from this type of business, which tends to be a low growth business. But, it's a good business. Their free cash flow is negative, which I don't like, about $1 billion negative, and I would like to know why that is. Are they investing in a particular factory? Why? I want to look at those trends, so I'm going to pull those up here in a minute. Their payout ratio is 84%, which is kind of high in relation to their earnings, so I don't like that. It's a fairly cyclical business. Their cash dividend payout ratio is 755%, meaning their cash flows are nowhere close enough to handle their payout. So I think that dividend is a little bit in danger, or it's probably not going to grow. And for us, dividend growth is a big, big factor. So for me, it's a little bit overvalued at these levels. Not grossly, but I think over the long run, you'll do fine. But understand, it's probably better a value in the high 40s as opposed to the high 50s. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein. Give me a call, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, guys. This is Eric calling from Los Angeles. I had a quick question about cannabis stocks. I'm invested in a few, one of them being the ticker symbol ACBFF, and it's doing really well. I got in at $2. It's around 5.5 now, but I was curious what you guys thought about holding it. I'm considering holding it at least through 2018 because sometime next year, cannabis is going to be legal in Canada nationally, and I think it's going to take off. And here in California, it's going to start being recreational legal in January. So So I was wondering when you guys thought. Part of my problem is I'm doing really good now, and I get really excited and hoping for that huge home run. And I'm curious if you would get out now, or you'd hold on like me and hoping that this $5 stock will turn into 20 or 30 next year. Thanks a lot. Hope to hear it on the podcast.
Certainly an industry that is growing, and no pun intended, and the most of the stocks that are listed are Canadian companies because it's legal to list them there. This is Aurora Cannabis. It's a medical marijuana company engaged in production and distribution of medical marijuana pursuant to the Marijuana for Medical Purpose Regulations, and they're headquartered in British Columbia. I would need to do a little background. Are they in California? You know, because they're already in Canada. What's their footprint like? Revenues are... What are their revenues doing? Revenues are up 180% year over year, which is certainly very high. But this is a $2.7 billion company, $2.3 billion enterprise value, on revenues of $17.8 million over the trailing 12 months. So from a price-to-sales ratio, that's astronomical. Obviously, there's some built-in nature to what is eventually going to happen, which is legalization. I thought it was legal in Canada already. I'm not, you know, too up on Canadian marijuana laws, but that's what I thought. So I would really need to understand the business more. How much potential revenue are they going to tap in 2018 from Canada and potentially California, or maybe any other states that are becoming recreationally legal? So these are growth names. You know, it's kind of like a biotech company. It's a story. I think it's a better story than biotech, because biotech has to go through regulations and. Who knows if their drug works for what it says it does, whereas marijuana, you know, it's been around for a long time. You know there's a market for it. It's just a matter of, is Aurora the one that's going to be a leader? There's plenty of other ones out there. This isn't the only one. So understand that. What's their management like? You know, management in this space is going to be most important, because they're going to need to expand. Do they have the ability, do they have the vision to expand into the markets with the right products, the right business model, etc., to become a profitable company? Because obviously now they're burning $20 million a quarter, which isn't a ton, but they're going to need to ramp up spending to expand. So what I would say is you're up nicely. Now it's at $7.17, up 12% today. Take a little off the table. Take half of what you put into it, at least, and let the rest ride. And, you know, do a little research. Do a lot of research. And I wish I could help you more, but I don't have that hardcore research that you're really going to have to do for these tiny penny stocks with potential, untapped potential, but who knows how much and how much is already built in with about a $3 billion market cap. Now let's look at our list of topics today. Five great uses for required minimum distributions. Also have some other topics that I want to discuss as well. One is five money mistakes to avoid in the new year. We're obviously going into new year. We all make money mistakes. So let's try to tackle a few of those and put you on the right track in the new year. And then lastly, the retail industry. It's certainly changing, but for us in KPP, we found a lot of good values in the space, have done very well with many of them, and it just goes to show that Amazon, while it's very strong and, you know, it's not going anywhere, it's not taking over the world, I think, like everyone had expected, and there's still a place for many different types of retail experiences, and that's what I'm going to touch on, is what type of companies can compete in today's retail landscape. So those are the main talking points that are on my mind, but ultimately I want to know what is on your mind. Is it, it's the year end, you know, looking back, are you happy with your results both from a saving standpoint, because that's certainly more important than the investing. I know we talk about investing so much on Invest Talk, naturally, but savings is very, very important. So let's talk a little bit about that. That usually first starts with your 401k. So if you have questions about your 401k, maybe about real estate, buying a house, selling a house, the tax bill, how it affects you, what changes you should be making in the new year. So I want to hear from you. Give me a call. Now, coming up on the next Invest Talk, don't let home bias investing trip you up. That's one of our topics on the next Invest Talk. But what's your topic today? My direct line between 4 and 5 Pacific time is 888-99-CHART.
Our Invest Talk podcast continues. One of KPP Financial's solutions that help solve today's retirement puzzle is our balanced income portfolio. How do you get the income you need in retirement without the kind of risk that you don't feel comfortable with? That's what this program is all about, the balanced income portfolio from KPP Financial. And remember, as with each KPP program, the principles at KPP are invested right along with you. Would you like to know more about it, the balanced income portfolio? You can call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts, or you can ask Steve about it directly. Just click on the Contact Steve button on investtalk.com. Now let's get back to the podcast. Now, Invest Talk Real Estate. Chevy Akison, real estate agent and investor, speaks with Justin Klein about upgrading your house before selling.
Now, Chevy, a lot of sellers have kitchens that might be outdated, bathrooms that might be outdated, different parts of their house that need work, right? And generally, I think a lot of people have the question, should I fix those problem areas of my home? Or should I just sell it as is? And what type of fixes are usually worth the expenditure?
It's a great question, Justin. So, you know, what I always tell people is what sells homes are kitchens and bathrooms. Obviously, generally speaking, the wife is making the decision. So the kitchen is going to be what really sells. The master bath is also very important. With that being said, you know, I work with a lot of flippers that we buy homes both on the market as well as go straight to the trustee sale. And what I've found, though, occasionally to get the best return for my flip investors, sometimes we find that the neighborhoods really don't require a remodeled kitchen or remodeled bathroom because they're so popular and the range from the high to the low isn't that large. So it's extremely neighborhood specific. Sometimes my investors have a much better return, and so would a normal seller, by just leaving the kitchen and leaving the bathroom, knowing that the neighborhood is going through maybe a rejuvenation. And so the older homes are selling for enough of a premium that by the time you put in the money for the kitchen and bathroom, you're not getting it back out.
So you're saying a lot of buyers are redoing it themselves anyway, so they're not really going to care.
And they'd rather have it done their own way. So as a result, I'm seeing, like, I mean, take a neighborhood, for example, that's selling for $1 million. You know, a remodeled kitchen, a remodeled bathroom on the low end is going to cost, you know, probably close to $50,000. So if you can sell that same home for $950 to $970 and let someone do it on their own, save the time, save the effort, save the headache, and don't do it. If the range is $800,000 to $1 million, you can spend $40,000 or $50,000 and then get $1 million versus $800,000 to $850,000, then we'd probably advise them to do it if they have the money and they have the time and want to put in the effort.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So now, what about really exterior features? Thinking of painting the house, maybe putting a new roof on. What if your pool is old?
Yeah, I mean, some neighborhoods, a pool home will actually go for a premium. A lot of times the pool home doesn't have any premium because the community has a pool. Pools, generally speaking, aren't the best investment for a property. And again, it's very neighborhood specific. But one thing that is true is in most neighborhoods, buyers don't have that much of a vision. So you need to show them the vision. So a lot of times you do need to do the kitchen and bathroom. But like I said, there's exceptions. But that's why it is important to have a professional truly analyze the market and tell you, is it worth it to do it or not? Someone that's selling potentially hundreds of homes, if I was only doing 4 deals a year, I'd be nowhere near the advisor to my clients as we are today because we buy and sell so many properties.
If you have a question, 888-99-CHART is the number to call, or contact KPP's own licensed realtor and financial advisor, Justin Klein. Click on Contact Justin on investtalk.com.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Rob calling from Las Vegas. Wanted to see if you could do a quick analysis on Riot, R-I-O-T. I've seen over the past couple weeks it's gone down 30, 40% or so. Wanted to just put in a small position, maybe 1% of my portfolio, nothing too much at these prices. Look forward to your answer. Thank you. Bye-bye.
R-I-O-T, Riot Blockchain Incorporated. Don't buy this. Don't do it. Look, I mean, let me give you what they do. They provide exposure to the blockchain ecosystem through targeted investments in the sector. This is the hot thing. Cryptocurrencies, blockchain, and you know, if you saw or listened to my episode that I did, was it 2 weeks ago maybe? On cryptocurrencies, on Bitcoin, on blockchain. Let me try to sum up this all. It's going to crash. I don't know when exactly it's going to crash. It's going to crash. And the reason is because this is not a currency, right? If you understand the technology of blockchain, there are major flaws. And a lot of people are talking about the flaws of Bitcoin at the current time, from transaction costs to speed. Obviously, security has always been an issue to a degree. That's just a problem of blockchain. That's a blockchain problem. It's going to apply to every single currency that is backed by blockchain at some point, if it ever gets popular and transactions start to happen with it. Okay? So, yes, there are different protocols that make that maybe less of an issue, and they're trying to work through different things to improve what in general is called scalability, which is taking this technology and applying it to millions and millions of transactions each day, like Visa or MasterCard does, you know, transactions today. And if in the current form, it's nowhere even close to scalability. Now, will they eventually get there? Yeah. But it's going to be a different form of blockchain. There's another cryptocurrency called IOTA that's based on a technology called Tangle that uses a different type of strategy to do transactions to actually speed it up. But that doesn't solve other types of issues like energy and, you know, so many problems with the cryptocurrency space. So is it the hot sector now? It's hot sector. Is this something that I hope eventually gets to where it needs to be to have one world currency and get rid of central banks? Yes. Do I think it's anytime soon? Absolutely not. I look at this like internet in the 60s, still trying to figure out the technology, figure out the protocol, figure out how to really make it work effectively. And they didn't really get that with the internet until TCP was created, which is kind of the backbone of the internet. And so it's going to be many, many years before the technology is there. It's a great idea, but the more if you actually understand currencies and you actually understand the technology, it is nowhere close to ready. And it won't be for many years. So once the fervor kind of dies down, it will crash. So will Riot blockchain. Don't worry about it. I know it sucks. You have FOMO, fear of missing out. Everyone wants to ride the wave. You're too late. I wish I bought it. Okay? Everyone, it's natural human emotion. Okay? So don't feel bad. Now let's go to our main talking point today. It's about your RMD. Five great uses for required minimum distributions. Now, if you are approaching the age of 70 and a half, or maybe you're older than that, or you just know that you'll probably get there one day, which hopefully we all do, this is the time of year when you have to take your required minimum distributions from your tax-deferred retirement accounts, which means you have to pay taxes on a portion of that savings in your IRAs or your 401k, 529, or not, sorry, not 529, 403b, those type of tax-deferred employer-sponsored accounts. So investors who haven't tapped all of their retirement accounts by the time of 70 and a half, they have to take those distributions whether they want the money or not. You have to do it because the government wants their taxes eventually. And the way it's calculated is based on a percentage of the previous year end account balances. And this is generally considered taxable income when you take it. Now, what can you do with it? Well, first is you can reinvest it. You can put it in your bank account, buy CDs, money market. You can go in your brokerage account, buy stocks, mutual funds, bonds, etc. Not a bad way to go. You know, put that money to work. Try to earn a little bit to reduce that tax burden. Number two, you can put money towards your grandchild's 529 college savings plan. And many providers make it very easy to gift to that account if, say, your kids had already set it up. Or you can do it on your own. You can set one up for your grandkids. And now with the new tax changes, actually 529 plans can be applied to a lot more. So I think they're more effective now with the new tax plan. You can be charitable. You can actually move money directly from that tax-deferred account up to $100,000, known as a qualified charitable distribution, and move those funds directly to the qualified charity. You can actually move the actual security as well, I believe. So this special distribution can satisfy your RMD amount, and it won't be applied to your taxable income. One way to go. My favorite is fund a Roth IRA. Now, you can contribute to a Roth IRA if you have earned income over the year. So if you're still working, have some sort of income, and you meet the income limits, you can take out all of that money, all that contribution, tax-free as well in the future. So it's not like you are locking it up again. And you can withdraw it after all that money after 5 years, all growth as well. And if you die, there's some tax benefits for your heirs as well. And then lastly, give back. Treat your family, go on a vacation, splurge a little. You know, you're over 70. You know, you probably want to enjoy your life as much as you possibly can. Help friends, help family, explore your passion, go on some trips. Spend it. It's not the end of the world. As long as you know you're comfortable. Now, do you have an active 401k? Do you feel active in your management of it? Many employees feel that they have little real control and fewer choices than they'd like. That's why KP Financial thinks you would like to know more about active 401k. This is a 401k management program that guides towards the best possible choice in your employer plan. Find out more on InvestTalk and look for active 401k.
A survey showed that 73% of investors say keeping my money safe is more important to me than trying to generate returns. Well, Steve takes risk management seriously too, and that's why during his portfolio reviews, he examines retirement accounts with risk in mind, managing it to protect investors' future. Steve schedules just a few of these individual checkups each month, and if you'd like to reserve your own hour on Skype or telephone, just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab and then Portfolio Review.
Hi, big fan of your show, InvestTalk. I listen to it every day. I just had a quick question about DDD. It's a 3D system company. I figured, you know, it'd start going up since 3D become such a big thing with 3D printers and whatnot. So I just wanted your input on it. I wasn't sure if I should get rid of it because I bought it at $10. and it's already dropped to 880, and it's just a pretty big percentage drop. So I just wanted your input on DDD. My name's Zach Wright. I'm in Michigan. Once again, thank you for letting me be on the show. Bye.
All right, he's looking at 3D Systems. They manufacture printing, prototyping, and manufacturing systems to produce 3D objects from computer data. This is a 3D printing company, hence the ticker symbol DDD. They were earning some profits, but this year they're now losing 4 cents a share. And this is a stock that's come way down, right? In the 2010, 2013, there was a lot of hype behind the industry, and this went all the way up to $80 a share when it was only making, 70 cents a share, 100 PE. And as growth started to wane, so did the stock. And it fell as low as roughly $6 a share, rallied earlier this year all the way to 23. Now it's all the way back to 877. So certainly falling on hard times. They have about $1 billion market cap, revenues of $634 million, and their free cash flow is negative $10 million. So that worries me a little bit. Let's look at the profitability. Yeah, return on invested capital, negative 8%. Financial leverage isn't high. They don't have a ton of debt. Their cash flow is, you know, kind of ho-hum. It's positive, but it's not really that exciting, to be honest with you. And their growth isn't that exciting. So what's a no-growth company worth whose net income is negative, whose net margins are negative 8%, and not really getting better? You know, I think this is just overvalued. I would not own it. Technically, it looks terrible on a chart. You know, it's been in a downtrend since the mid-year. And it looks like it's going to break that low from 2016 of around $6. So I would not own it. I would stay out of it. At one point, it's going to probably have another resurgence. But this is not the time for it. The chart isn't telling me. The fundamentals aren't telling me that. So I would stay away from 3D Systems. Now you're listening to Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. If you'd like to get your question in before we're up for the day, we're beginning our final segment in just a bit. Give us a call. 888-99-CHART is our direct line right now.
Hey, Steve or Justin. I was just wondering, with the tax bill passing, would it be a good idea to, let's say, pick up some index funds and hold it? I know historically speaking, the years following tax decreases, the markets tend to go up. But I also know that years following tax hike, the markets have also went up. Is it safe to assume that it would be a good idea to do this, just following historical norms, or it's not something to take into consideration with these overvalued markets? It's more risk reward, more risk than the return. I'm just wondering if you think it's a good idea or it's just too risky. Thanks a lot.
All right, great question. I actually think it is too risky in this market. Not to say you should never do it, but the market is very overvalued. A lot of these tax cuts are priced in. You know, I've been talking about it for a while. They're priced in at least some degree. And even if they weren't priced in, you know, the market, the overvalued nature of the markets in general means that It was priced in even if the market didn't want to price it in. Let's say that. Simply by such overvalued markets. And you're in the teeth, you're going into the teeth of central banks tightening their liquidity. This year was a record, close to a record year in money printing from central banks around the world. And they have to be looking at the cryptocurrency space and saying, okay, we need to stop this because this is why that's happening. If they're not, they're dumber than I expected. But I don't think they're that stupid. So I think they're going to tighten liquidity substantially next year in an overvalued market. That's a pretty tough recipe. Not to say the market can't go up next year. Certainly can. But it's going to be a challenge to come even close to what we, half of what we had this year. So don't expect that. So I would say no, unless, I would not be allocating more money to index funds, actually. I would be reducing your exposure to index funds. Let's go to Wendy in Chino Hills. How you doing, Wendy?
Good. How are you, Justin? I like the...
Doing great. What can I do for you?
Live stream. Very good.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, yes. We just started that. It's a little bit of an experiment. It takes a little bit more brain power to do the show, but I hope people like it.
Yeah, I think it's a very good when you talk about like to look at different places like Morningstar. You kind of show us where to look at like different cash flow, where to look at and what should you look at it. You know. Anyway, that's
That's the goal and
that and
yeah. So for everyone else out there, I share my screen so you can see what exactly I'm looking at when someone's calling about a particular stock. And that's what Wendy's talking about. So if anyone else wants to tune in, just go to our YouTube channel, type in Invest Talk, and subscribe, and you can see past shows and actually live stream shows like this one.
Yeah. So today's question is regarding, I think, Arista Network. I think it's overvalued, but I think the growth and everything else is pretty good. So like this kind of stock. You know they are overvalued. Do you just wait for a pullback or something? And if we are waiting for a pullback, can you give me a price point for that one?
Okay. Yeah. So she's looking at Arista Networks, and they provide cloud networking software, hardware for the internet, cloud, and next-gen data centers. So their stock has really taken off over the past, 2 years. Gone from 60 to 240 in... about a year and a half. So revenue's up 55% year over year, earnings up 95% year over year, and P/E ratio is only 49. So it's actually not crazy overvalued. It's certainly overvalued, operating earnings yield of 2%. let me give you a price target on this. 150. At 150, I would love this stock. Okay, so I would wait for a pullback till then, and I think you'll get that because I think next year value will outperform growth, and you'll get a pullback in these type of names. Thanks for the call, Wendy. Time to wrap it up. A reminder, if you're not near our California offices, Steve or I can meet with you via Skype or telephone for a one-on-one retirement portfolio review. It's easy. If you'd like to set up a time, just go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab, then Portfolio Review. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein, Chief Executive Officer of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. Steve Peasley and the whole KPP family, thank you for getting together with us today. Let's meet again here again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461.